Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gatehouse Florida. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always by Gatehouse Florida Capitol correspondent John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hi, Zach.
Well, Congress is formally moving ahead with an impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump, and Florida's Democratic congressional delegation is voicing support for the move. Meanwhile, Governor Ron DeSantis is grappling with his own political turmoil this week, including some high-profile departures from the Florida GOP and the release of an investigation that found he improperly fired the Broward County Sheriff. We'll talk about all that and more, but first... You all know what that music means. It's time for John and I to pick a number. John, you're from New England, so I know you're an expert at fall apple picking, but what about fall number picking?
Very good. Zach, you know, last week I reduced my number to a double digit number, not the usual millions and billions I tend to go with. But this week I've cut even the double digits in half. My number is 6.
Wow. You keep going lower and lower. You're going to run out of numbers here. Well, I can top that. My number this week is 15. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We'll tell you their significance in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, all right, let's get to the impeachment debate, because that's what everybody who is interested in politics is talking about right now. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced a formal impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump's conduct this week following revelations that the president pressured his counterpart in Ukraine to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden, who is now running for president and is one of Trump's top political rivals. Florida has 27 members of Congress. 14 of them are Republicans. 13 of them are Democrats. And by my count, it looks like all 13 of those Democrats are now supporting the impeachment inquiry. Here's Charlie Crist, who is a former Republican governor and attorney general, and who now represents a congressional district in the Tampa Bay area as a Democrat, discussing why he now favors an impeachment investigation.
There comes a point, and especially as a former attorney general, where the rule of law has to be respected. And we are at that point. And it seems to me that the only effective way that the Congress can find out what the administration did or did not do is to have the impeachment inquiry go forward with all the arsenal of discovery that we can bring to bear.
So Chris's support for the impeachment inquiry is noteworthy, I think, because until this week, he had resisted calling for these impeachment proceedings to begin. His district is one of the most competitive congressional districts in the state of Florida. So taking a stance on a polarizing issue like impeachment carries some political risk for him. And it's also risky for Stephanie Murphy, an Orlando area Democrat who is probably the most vulnerable Democrat in the state. Her district is considered really a pure toss-up seat, and she has been very careful about not appearing to be too partisan. She chairs the Blue Dog Coalition in the House, which is a group of centrist Democrats. This week, Murphy called Trump's actions, quote, an abuse of executive power. And she said, quote, I support the House's ongoing impeachment inquiry to get the facts for the American people. More than 200 congressional Democrats now support this impeachment inquiry, but so far, Republicans have either stood behind Trump, stayed quiet on the issue, or offered some vague criticism of his dealings with the Ukraine president without calling for impeachment. One of Trump's strongest defenders is Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, who said the impeachment effort shows that Democrats have a, quote, bloodlust for going after Trump. I saw this movie as it related to Russia, and I don't like it very much, and I doubt I'm going to enjoy the cheap Ukrainian knockoff, Gaetz said on the House floor this week. The speaker has embraced these concerns, and I fear that her embrace of impeachment does great damage to the House of Representatives. Gaetz is always good for a colorful quote. John, Florida is often a pretty good place to take the country's political temperature. Democratic leaders here had resisted impeachment, but the rallying cry among their base seems to have grown too loud to ignore. Meanwhile, the Florida GOP still seems dug in behind the president. Do you think the impeachment reaction we're seeing in the Florida delegation is a a sign of really how divided the nation is on this?
Yeah, it sure does seem to be. You know, early polling nationwide shows 6 in 10 Americans don't feel that Trump should be impeached. But at the same time, 49% of Democrats surveyed believed that the president had abused his power. And that compares with 11% of Republicans. So Florida's congressional delegation has a petri dish reflecting the nation's political divide seems pretty accurate. Now these opinion numbers are certain to change as more information comes out about the facts surrounding this Trump phone call with the Ukrainian president. But this looks like, you know, it's going to be a really long slog here if House Democrats do move in the direction of formalizing the impeachment inquiry that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has called for. You know, it's bound to overshadow the whole presidential campaign going forward. And of course, there's probably a very strong chance that this will result in some blowback on Democrat Joe Biden, whose own involvement with the Ukrainian government and his son Hunter's business dealings there have, you know, evidently inspired Trump to lean on the Ukrainian president to push for a corruption investigation. You know, Biden here in Florida, you know, he's been the longtime front runner, but we've talked about how polls show Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has been edging closer to Biden, you know, in polls here and in also across the nation. But my gut tells me that the longer Trump keeps Biden in the spotlight of this, it's going to somehow hurt Biden just by extension, even in Florida, where he has been the front runner with, you know, the state's older, more reliable to vote Democrats. Voters that are more toss up in this very toss up state, they may be tired of Trump and looking for a change in the White House that could now maybe come around to that. They also grow weary of Biden too, if he's part of this long fight over impeachment. Seeing Biden rightly or wrongly as somehow tarred by this Washington insider brush when it comes to using influence in a foreign nation. You got to wonder, does that open the door further to a Warren campaign here in Florida? So I think all told, this impeachment move is a risky one for both the presidential frontrunners, Trump and Biden, I think.
Yeah, and it could be a risky one for Democrats as a whole. You know, Democrats have picked up a number of congressional seats in Florida in recent years. Stephanie Murphy, who I just spoke about, she picked up a seat that was held by a Republican, Donna Shalala down in South Florida. There's a couple of South Florida Democrats who picked up Republican held congressional seats, and Democrats want to hold on to those seats and other seats that they've won all over the country in areas that had been represented by Republicans and areas that Donald Trump carried in 2016. And that's the big reason that Speaker Pelosi had resisted calls for impeachment up until this point, is she worried that it was a political loser, that, you know, even people, independents and maybe even some Democrats who dislike the president, maybe don't necessarily want to see him impeached. But it seems like the calls among the base, that the concern about the president's behavior has become too strong, especially among the Democratic Party, for the leadership to ignore. And we'll see how this plays out. We should note that there's a lot more information to come out here. Even as we're recording this podcast, the whistleblower complaint that sort of started this whole discussion about Trump putting pressure on Ukraine, that was just released. People are just reading that now. There's hearings going on in the House, on the House Intelligence Committee, where they're questioning the Director of National Intelligence. So there's a lot of facts that are still to come out here. But as you noted, John, that polls have shown that people are, on the whole, more skeptical than impeachment of impeachment than favoring it. Will that change as some of these more facts come out? When people read this whistleblower complaint, we'll have to see. But it certainly carries a lot of political risk here. Well, the impeachment drama is hard to ignore. But here in Florida, we've had some of our own political turmoil recently. Governor Ron DeSantis suffered a blow this week when a special master assigned to review the circumstances surrounding the governor removing former Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel from office ruled that DeSantis acted inappropriately. Israel received a lot of criticism for how his officers responded to the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School last year in Parkland, Florida, that left 17 people dead. But the special master said it was inappropriate to remove him from office based on those failures. Now the Florida Senate will meet during a special session in October to weigh the special master's report and decide whether to reinstate Israel. John, do you think there's a good chance the Senate could give Israel his job back?
You know, Zach, this is the time of year when football coaches who have started the season with losing streaks get placed on the hot seat. Well, I think in this case, the Florida Senate has a hot seat of its own right now, thanks to this special master's report that, you know, concludes the governor was wrong when he removed Israel for what the governor said were constitutional offenses of neglect of duty and incompetence. Now, Israel has already been replaced by a DeSantis appointee, Sheriff Gregory Tony, but the Senate is being urged by the special master to reinstate Israel. The focus of this accusation, as you mentioned, it stems from the Broward Sheriff's Department's handling of the massacre at the Parkland High School and a 2017 shooting at Fort Lauderdale International Airport, in which five people were killed. Now, the special master in this case is Dudley Goodlett. He's a former Republican state House member from Naples who also served as a chief of staff to a Republican House speaker. He's a conservative, but concluded that DeSantis's team presented no evidence that Israel's staff that Israel puts people in his department that are, you know, unfit, and that he should ultimately take the fall for these these tragedies. So what does the Senate do now? They're left with a choice of, do they defy the special master and his conclusions based on a two-day hearing and a mountain's worth of evidence? That's how Goodlett reached his recommendation. Or do they defy the Republican governor who suspended Israel? And you remember Okaloosa school superintendent Mary Beth Jackson and Palm Beach County election supervisor Susan Booker. All those suspensions occurred within days of DeSantis taking office for various misdeeds that DeSantis concluded they committed while in office. Now Jackson and Booker chose not to fight their ouster, likely seeing, you know, no chance of success trying to bring their case to the Republican-led Senate. Well, here's a Democrat sheriff from Democrat-heavy Broward County, now with a fighting chance of getting reinstated. While Goodlett points out that DeSantis relied chiefly on details from the Marjory Stoneman Douglas Commission, which examined the shootings at length, the Goodlett also pointed out that the chairman of that commission, Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Galteri, that he concluded that his fellow sheriff shouldn't be held personally responsible for these events. So, you know, all told, what we have now is a political mess for the state's Republican leadership, and it's going to play out in a special session of the Senate that Senate President Bill Galvano has now set for October 21st to the 25th. While you know, you have Goodlett, who's the special master, he's a stickler for things like evidence, rule of law, and due process. DeSantis, in his response to this recommendation, he already seems to be deploying a Trump-style tactic of pressuring the Senate to basically rely on emotions and go with its gut in acting. After Goodlett recommended the reinstatement, DeSantis issued a statement saying Floridians, quote, expect their senators will provide the accountability that the Parkland families have sought for the past year and a half. So, you know, the Senate clearly knows what the governor wants them to do, and that's to uphold his firing of Israel.
So DeSantis is trying to make this more of a political debate than a legal debate. What do you think about the political fallout for him from all this? You know, you could read this report and conclude that DeSantis acted rashly in firing Israel. It could be argued that he was really doing this for the political benefit from firing an unpopular sheriff after a horrible tragedy like this. And he was maybe eager to be seen as taking action, even if that meant stretching the limits of this authority. Does this make it look like the governor acted in an overly political manner? And could you think that could hurt him going forward?
That's a good point. This could become a very, high profile misstep by the still relatively new governor, where he came into office. He had, wanted to appear, very much take charge, especially in those early days of the administration. And here were three officials that could be tossed, for various wrongdoing in their time in office. But, two of them happened to be constitutionally elected officers, including Israel. And Israel fought back and had the resources to fight back, evidently. So this could be something that, really shines a light on the way the DeSantis administration operates. And, even more so, I think it puts the Republican-led Senate in a dicey position here where they could, really antagonize the Republican governor, which is something I don't think they want to do. But at the same time, it seems very difficult for them to ignore what looks like a very well thought out a special master's report by a special master who, himself is quite a conservative.
Yeah, it's interesting because DeSantis got pretty positive reviews of the first few weeks and months of his administration. He was seen as being very decisive, taking a lot of action, getting a lot of stuff done, being really quick out of the gate, and doing things that had bipartisan support. But now when you look at this, it seems like maybe he acted a little too rashly. Maybe he wasn't, proceeding with the proper amount of caution and, really examining the facts here. So, there could be a re-evaluation of some of these actions that he took early on if they start to unwind. Well, the questions surrounding Scott Israel's removal from office wasn't the only turmoil DeSantis was dealing with this week. He continued to face questions about the ouster of a top Republican political consultant from the Florida GOP. Susie Wiles helped guide DeSantis to victory last year. Wiles also helped elect former Governor Rick Scott, and she ran Trump's Florida campaign in 2016. She was going to reprise her role as Trump's Florida campaign chief for the 2020 campaign, but DeSantis pushed her out late last week. John, Susie Wiles, she's really a rock star in Florida GOP politics. She scored the three biggest wins that Republicans have had in recent years with DeSantis, Trump, and Scott. You caught up with DeSantis this week. What was his explanation for pushing Trump to ditch Wiles?
Yeah, he wouldn't say much, frankly. He said his actions stem from the president wanting to get the Florida Republican Party in order, which is pretty vague and frankly an apparently misleading statement. But here's a little background on why DeSantis jettisoned one of the most successful Republican operatives. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote for our Gatehouse papers a story about how a lot of DeSantis' appointments to boards and commissions were prominent donors to his political spending committee, which has raised kind of a remarkable $2.5 million since his election. That same weekend, the Tampa Bay Times had a story that outlined a fundraising strategy for the governor, which also dated back to the first days of his administration. It showed, stuff like the price for donors of playing golf with the governor and other costs for, getting close with the with DeSantis, that Wiles had prepared this kind of itemized, here's what it'll cost you to, have a sit down with the governor. That Wiles had prepared this for him, but which DeSantis said after the story was published that he wasn't aware of and never acted on. Several subsequent accounts say that DeSantis now has suspected Wiles as somehow helping leak this memo to the paper, even as he was, getting sensitive to all this scrutiny of his fundraising. So it looks like Wiles took the fall for this leak, and DeSantis decided that, she not only had to be shunned from his administration, but also from Trump's campaign, which she helped lead in Florida in 2016. Now Wiles is as you pointed out, she's a political magic maker. She's from Jacksonville, the daughter of the late New York Giants great Pat Summerall, who went on to a, great broadcasting career. Wiles helped lead Scott's campaign, and that's how she got into Trump's orbit. And then when DeSantis's campaign was looking pretty weak up against Democrat Andrew Gillum, she was called in late into that campaign, and she basically helped right the ship and led him to that recount victory last fall. But, you know, since then, she's been an advisor and also a lobbyist with the high-priced Brian Ballard firm, which, you know, also works for the Trump business interests in Florida. But evidently, DeSantis's wife, Casey, and the governor's chief of staff, Shane Strum, they became increasingly uneasy about the Florida Republican Party bearing Wiles's imprint somehow. And they wanted more of their own people in there. Now, you know, the plot thickens a little bit here as to, you know, who's going to, you know, be in the line of fire. Florida Republican Party Chairman Joe Gruters, now he's a Sarasota state senator that we've quoted frequently on this podcast. He's a big Trump guy and also very loyal to DeSantis. But now I'd say he looks endangered too, or he at least is very effectively neutered with DeSantis bringing in another Trump guy, a former interim head of the Veterans Administration, Peter O'Rourke, to serve as the party's executive director. Here's DeSantis's evaluation of what he's seen at the Florida Republican Party and what he wants done in advance of the 2020 election. Here's some sound from DeSantis this week.
It means that the first 8 months, and I think the chairman would agree with this, by the large, if you asked Joe, you know, there wasn't a lot that was done in really moving the ball forward. So what I want to do is things like things that aren't necessarily sexy. I mean, voter registration, you know, finding folks who are unregistered, making sure people moving to Florida who agree with us are registered and being ready to vote, building out field organizations. It's not going to be like glitzy television commercials. It's not going to probably make political consultants wealthy, but it's the really kind of nit and gritty stuff that makes a difference. And so we haven't really seen that. I think now you will see that.
So DeSantis is suddenly, you know, all hands on at the party. And, you know, frankly, that may not be good for Gruters. It clearly wasn't good for Susie Wiles, who has even lost her job with the Ballard firm and all this, taking a leave of absence for health reasons. You know, Wiles is considered a very strong Florida strategist, and there are plenty of party insiders who I think fear that her removal could come back and bite Trump next year, and maybe DeSantis also. She's a talent, but working for Trump and DeSantis, you know, who's his Florida protege, well, that may be the toughest job of all.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny explanation from DeSantis in my mind. If Wiles is really working to reelect Trump and really, you know, pushing that, shouldn't it be like Brad Pascal or somebody like that who is upset with her and the work that she's done? I mean, it's just kind of interesting that that DeSantis has stepped in, and it would seem like his criticism would be more of Gruters, who's the head of the party, if nothing has happened in the last 8 months to get things ready for the 2020 election. I mean, it just seems like this is more maybe a turf war, personality conflicts or something like that, but who knows for sure. And, you know, as you said, John, I mean, I think some people are nervous in the Republican camp about pushing Wiles out, considering her track record of winning, you know, winning papers over a lot of issues and that people have. And you just have to wonder that if things start looking difficult for Trump in Florida down the stretch, does Wiles reappear here to try and rescue the campaign? So we'll have to keep an eye on her campaign, but it's hard to argue that anybody has been more successful than her in GOP politics in the last decade or so in Florida. We're going to move on to our final segment here. John, your number was six?
Six.
You want to coin that?
Six is the number of years that it's been since the Florida governor and legislature approved an across-the-board pay raise for teachers. That was back when Rick Scott pushed lawmakers for a $480 million pay package that allowed for $2,500 salary increases for teachers. That was back in 2013. Well, this week, DeSantis said he's looking to enact a teacher pay package when the legislature convenes in January. He's not offering any specifics, but he did say that the increase will be, quote, more than a little token. So that's a little less chest thumping than what Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran has been saying. He's been calling DeSantis's plans massive and landmark in recent appearances, hinting that something big is coming. But, you know, we'll see. But this is sort of this week kind of the first time that DeSantis sort of, confirmed that he has something up his sleeve right now for teachers. He said teachers need better pay in Florida to stave off a teacher shortage, where many counties are wrestling with job openings and teachers leaving the profession because the pay is not great. And of course, it's a very demanding job. Annual salaries in Florida for teachers average just under $48,500 a year. And a national survey just this week ranked Florida 48th in teacher pay among the states. Now Scott got his pay package through a year before he won re-election. And while DeSantis isn't on the ballot next year, it is a big election year. And there's always a political calculus at play. And maybe a decent pay increase is seen as one way of blunting the political reach of the Florida Education Association. That's the state's biggest teachers union, which also favors Democrats in campaigns for the legislature and other offices. So, maybe by offering this pay increase, that takes a little bit of the fire and brimstone out of the Florida Education Association when they're campaigning against Republicans next year.
Yeah, education is always a big political football. So getting out in front on the issue and trying to appease some of the folks in the public education community might be a smart idea for the governor. Well, my number is 15. So 15 percentage points is how much support Joe Biden has lost in Florida since May, according to polling information from Ryan Tyson, a Florida pollster who shared his latest survey with Politico this week. And Tyson is a very respected pollster, typically works for Republicans, but is pretty well known in Florida political circles. His poll is concerning for Biden. He now has the support of 28% of Florida Democrats. Meanwhile, the poll showed Elizabeth Warren's support more than doubling during that time period to 11%. If you'll recall, we discussed some similar Florida poll numbers on last week's podcast. A Florida Atlantic University survey also showed Warren's support doubling in the state. So this survey from Tyson adds to the sense, I think, that Warren is on the rise here in Florida while Biden is dropping. And that's the same trend that we've seen nationally. Polls in both Iowa and New Hampshire have actually shown Warren in the lead. And Biden is really hoping that states like Florida, like South Carolina, that are more diverse, that have more minority voters, are really going to be a firewall for him. He's done pretty well with African-American voters. But if he falters in early states such as Iowa and New Hampshire, that could really change the dynamic for him heading into some of the later states. Florida votes in the primary on March 17th, I believe. So we'll have to see where his standing is as he comes into the state. But polling shows his support is slipping here as well. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy, Joseph Corzano, and Adam Fish. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.